Hello, hello again, everyone. Welcome back. This is Julie Knudsen with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 86. Today, I'm going to try and combine a few things together. One topic that I think is important to get out, and then I'm going to answer some listener questions that I've had recently. And I'm sure people are frustrated because I didn't, you know, get right on them, but that's a little difficult given the number that I get and the other things that I need to take care of first. So I apologize for delays. But I will always get to them if I possibly can. The topic that I'm first going to talk about today that I think is important is training the highly motivated or really wired dog. It seems like that a lot of the breedings today tend to be creating a little bit more of that. Either that or I'm just thinking about it more. I'm not really sure. But a lot of the dogs, when I see them or when I get them in, you know, if they were being evaluated as a human child, they would be hyperactive, attention deficit disorder. You know, just, man, they just can't turn it off. They just can't wind it down. And people have interesting ways to go about dealing with these dogs. And I just wanted to talk about my experience with them. And just some thoughts for people who have that. And now how people, how they define this dog that I'm talking about, this just mentally hyperactive dog, which then manifests as a physically hyperactive dog. I want to talk about what that actually is because it gets misinterpreted quite a bit. You know, if you have a little puppy and that's very hard for them to sit still and it's very hard for them to look at you and it's very hard for them to do any one thing for longer than a few seconds, you know, that may just be a puppy that's just terribly excited about life. Or it might be a dog that's showing you that in the future what kind of mentality you're going to have. But you don't know right off. So you want to at least pay attention, those of you with 8, 9, 10-week-old puppies that seem like, oh my gosh, look at this puppy. It's just, you can't just make a judgment right at that point. Oh, this is one of those. But you do want to just be very observant and watch what it is that you have. Some little guys are just very, very excited about life and very happy and they have all of this energy and they have no idea what to do with it. And so that comes across like a really highly motivated, wild and crazy dog. And it's not, if that's all that it is. And then there are other dogs who, and I'm not, you know, a psychological veterinarian, which would be really useful. But some of these dogs, it is the way that their mind is firing. It is the way that their mind works. And I'm not sure exactly what's happening in there, but just like there's people that have this, there's dogs who cannot sustain a continuous thought. You know, they're just, their mind is on one thing and another and another and another, and it's very, very hard to interact with them on a real satisfying level. And that's a different thing than a highly energetic puppy that doesn't know what to do with all of the energy. And so looking at these dogs from the very beginning, you want to at least have the door open for whether it's one or the other or sometimes a little bit of a combination. And then how you deal with these dogs and how you work with them and how you make sure that they understand what it is you're trying to communicate and how you give them every opportunity to learn to manage themselves and manage their situations. Makes this turn out in a far better way for everyone. But you have to look at it like this. And that just almost never happens. So I get many, many dogs in, and I get them somewhere around 6, 7 months of age usually. Sometimes I get them a little older, and they're way down a road that is not a good road to have gone down. But when I get them in, and the first thing I always hear, right, is, well, they're very good unless there's a distraction. Okay, again, that tells me everything about the people, and I don't know anything about the dog yet with that. Because, you know, every puppy that's been basically ungroomed and unmonitored and unworked with in a very focused manner is, you know, pays a lot of attention to distractions. And if you look at young humans, they're that way. You know, they, unless it's a screen, you know, they don't focus on anything. And so a lot of times our dogs are that way also. You know, they just don't focus on stuff. And if you're doing something and then, ooh, something happens, squirrel. And, you know, they make movies. That's on movies now, right? They have the Disney movies where it's a joke about the dog squirrel and everything's over with. And they can make that a joke in movies now because that's the way stuff is. But it's important for us who are owning dogs and working with dogs to understand to the best of our ability exactly what we have. So when I get these dogs in and I hear how they, you know, they're okay unless there's distractions, it doesn't tell me very much except about what this dog has probably experienced with these people. And that is that they've made attempts at walking on a leash or teaching them sit, or everybody's into stay for some reason. So they've taught them this stuff. And yet, it only works unless something else comes up. And then apparently, I guess they just stop working with them, or they stop expecting them to remain focused. Now, this is why I have a job, and this is why I get these dogs, because they're like, here, fix this, as they hand me this dog. And so my job now is to do what I just explained to everybody else here that they need to do. I need to sit there and go, okay, what goes on in this dog's head? What kind of head do I have? What kind of thinking do I have? Because at the age of 6, 7, 8 months, these dogs are a product of two things. One, their fundamental organic nature, you know, what their DNA and what their genetics say, and how their synapses tend to fire in an ungroomed manner, and, you know, where nobody's worked on developing a certain kind of response to things. So it's their DNA and their genetics. And the other part is their interactions with you every day of their life that they've been with you. Okay, they're a result of those two things. So again, people who say, and I get this all the time, we didn't do anything with her because we did not want to screw her up. And I'm going, oh my, I have a feral dog because they opted out of doing anything. So basically what I've got now is a dog who is just going with whatever their genetic predetermination says. And if, you know, however their thinking is, this is what we have. And it's basically been fostered by never, ever reining it in at all or trying to refine it and work with it. So it's important that, you know, this kind of thing be looked at on your young dogs and on some of your more mature dogs. If, you know, if you have one of these hyperactive, this is a crazy sucker, it would be interesting for you to go back and look at those early times if you can, particularly in an objective way. You know, how was it really? Not how was it because I was so good that I made this be so good, or this dog so crazy that even I couldn't fix him, but how was the dog actually? What were they actually like? So the puppies, almost all puppies, are just exuberant by the newness in the world. And their thinking is, you know, they have a lot of energy, and the body and the mind don't always connect directly. You know, have you ever seen a little dog run, a puppy, and the back legs start running faster than the front legs? You know, or one leg runs deeper than the other leg? You know, or when they see that they need to jump something over something, by the time the mind has got it, they've already slammed into it. The front legs didn't get into the lift thing. Okay, that's not crazy. That's just lack of, you know, that's just a puppy too young to have put things together. And most puppies are this way. And so if you watch them as the back legs run faster than the front legs, or you make a noise and they don't even notice and they run the other way. For the puppy that's just being a puppy, just an organically young, inexperienced, I don't know anything puppy, you, as you watch, that will improve with experience. You know, eventually they're running, the back end and the front end will start communicating, and then they will start working in union. You know, or they'll start to think before and jump over something before they run into it. You know, if they keep going after the old dog that you have until the old dog finally bites them, and then they decide, I best not do that anymore. Okay, that tells you that this dog is beginning to understand the world that it's in. and beginning to understand cause and effect. And you, as the owner and trainer of the dog, needs to help the dog, not just with experience, but with your interactions. You need to help the dog learn how to master themselves and how to do well in the world in which they find themselves. You know, I think I've had a lot of questions on the puppy attacking the older dog. You know, I've had people ask, you know, well, how long before you stop them? Or how many times can they do it before it's not okay? And I don't think it's okay, period. Now, an six, 8-week-old puppy, I don't think they even know what's happening. They don't know that they're attacking the older dog. They just think they're in a glob of puppies and they all kind of mangle each other. But as soon as that puppy starts to really understand, oh, there's another dog, I'm going to go jump and hang on his ear till it bleeds or whatever their thinking is. And if you allow that, then you are telling them that it's okay. When you allow it the first time and everybody kind of chuckles, oh, poor old Bessie, look at him. Boy, remember when she did that to old Fang a long time ago? Well, now she's getting her comeuppance. And when you let the little puppy do it, then you're telling the little puppy it's okay. Right? I don't think it's okay. So I probably, for me, I would intervene and just right off the bat, just try to remove that from their array of thoughts. You know, you can attack the toy and you can attack your own tail and you can attack the make-believe leaf out in the backyard, but you may not attack another living thing. So that's my deal. If I have to just go pick them up, put them in a crate or just hold on to them or whatever, you know, I'm going to let the old dog have a good life and I'm not going to let something mangle it all to pieces. So that's just me. But that's because I like to never have bad things develop and then have to go in there and troubleshoot. So maybe I'm just taking the shortcut there, going, let's just not let it start, and then we won't have to work on how do I stop it. Or have a puppy get, you know, their eye bitten or, you know, something really bad happened. And occasionally that happens. Sometimes even puppies have been killed when they've been annoying a dog that they shouldn't have been annoying. So I see it as a no-risk type of a thing. But now we've talked about crazy wild puppies. Let's talk about dogs whose insides of their heads are not always their friend. Now, there are people that are this way, you know. There are people who the inside of their heads are something that is difficult or impossible for them to control. And so that's why there's so much of the Adderall and the whatever, all the stuff that everybody takes to try and keep their mind in a somewhat more focused and manageable way. And there are animals that have something like that, and they have where their mind can easily, just kind of take them over. And it's very hard for them to get a hold of themselves and to know that you're there and to know that they need to listen and they need to respond. And this is really common. And people often assign that to, well, they're just a puppy. And it's like, yes, they're just a puppy. And they're having a lot of difficulty right now kind of grasping everything because their mind is not going to support this sort of thought process that a more normal or a more calm dog would be able to carry out. And so that's the kind of dog that I'm talking about. It's starting from a puppy and moving forward. And I truly believe that you have to go about those guys just a little bit differently. For example, it's very easy, I say from lots of personal experience, to get very frustrated with the dog, or frankly, the kid, who cannot pay attention, who cannot just actually like sit down. It's very frustrating to tell them to do something and they do it and then they're up. Tell them to do something and they do it and then they stop and they do something else. So then here's what happens, people training those dogs or looking at them. When you tend to get your energy level up, whether it's from frustration, whether you're angry, whether you're just tired and you don't want to have to work this hard, whatever it is, when your energy level and frustration winds itself up and goes up, that's exactly what feeds into this little dog whose energy level is wound up and going up. So whenever you feel that way, which is very, very understandable and very easy to do, it is not going to make the situation better. It's going to make it worse. And I can say this from firsthand experience. When your energy level goes up, up, up for whatever reason, then that just feeds into theirs and so does theirs. So when you're training these dogs that are very hyperactive and very mentally active, very, very mentally active, you have to go into this knowing that you have to be very, very not hyperactive, very, very moderated. You have to be real. You can't be frustrated and fake like you're not, because you can't fake these guys out. When you're wound up, they know it and they get more wound up. So that's thing number one. You have to go in there and go, all right, I am going to interact with this dog. I am going to work with it. I am going to begin to teach it some things. But what you're really trying to teach this dog, I don't care if you're working on with a leash or you're trying to teach it to sit or you're trying to get it to go get something and come back. It doesn't matter what you're doing. What you really are doing is teaching, establishing a thing between you and this dog that is a line of communication that is understood and open and effective, that the dog can trust. That's what you're trying to do. Maybe through healing, sitting, maybe through whatever you're doing, but the bottom line is we're trying to establish this line of communication that is understood and that the animal trusts. You have to know that in your head, and I don't know how many times we think of that when we start working with these guys. So if they're frustrated and have difficulty focusing and then you're frustrated and they're mad, it makes it worse. It makes their head thing worse. And so then somebody's going to tell you to use a lot of pressure, right? You need to do this or that with that dog. And so that's going to be another high energy situation. And the thing can just roll out of control sometimes. And you give up, you send the dog to somebody else, you get mad, you quit, you know, you go with the treat route. So now we're just going to feed them because at least that gets their energy onto one thing for a few microseconds. What you have to do is understand the goal. All right, I'm going to take this crazy little sucker and what we're going to do, and let's just use a little puppy, all right? And particularly, folks, if you have a little guy and it's 12 weeks old and you can tell it's one of these hyperactive ADHD kind of things where the little mind, no matter what, just has a devil of a time settling on anything unless it just falls fast asleep, right? When you see you have one of those, the best thing you can do is start to help developing a little bit of the ability, one, to trust you, two, to interact with you, and three, to the best of its ability at that age, begin to establish a little bit of continuity mentally. So just the little guys, and let me give some examples of what I'm talking about. Let's say you got a little one of these guys, 12, 13, 14 weeks old. You know, and it's just like this little robot where the engine's on high and there's no steering mechanism, right? And you just got this crazy little thing. Okay, that's good. One of the best places for this is that puppy walk that I've talked about over and over and over. Take that little dog out on a walk, and this time instead of in a kind of a pleasant walk, the two of you, motor on out there where that little dog's primary focus is keeping an eye on you. Okay, this is for the little guys now. So you take off through the field and you're moving quickly. And so the majority of this dog's energy has to be, oh, there's something over there. It looks like it would be good to eat. Oh no, but he's going over that way. I need to, and you basically let them develop a focus on you that they wouldn't any other way. No other, and this is more important than I have food, so come follow me around or come over to me. But this is a more primal thing. I need to stay with you. My survival, my existence is in connection with you. So that's a big deal. The walk is powerful on these little crazy guys. Any breed, anything. But it begins to develop some of that mental continuity I was talking about. I need to stay with him. I need to be where he is. I need to keep an eye on him. And it won't go perfect, particularly when you start. There's going to be all kinds of horrible stuff to eat. And their mind will be off of you and on that. And so you have to go over there, get their attention, take it out of their mouth, whatever, take off. And you have to develop, you know, it's not like a magic thing. You just go out in the field and they do all these things wonderfully. You've got to dig down and find a way to make this dog be connected with you without doing all the work for them. You know, figure it out. I've had to figure it out with dozens and dozens and dozens of dogs, and it's always different. But if I can dig down to reach them, now we have this connection thing, this open thing between us, and a lot of trust on that. I'm not going to do all the work for the dog, and I'm not going to punish him. I'm going to give them the opportunities to learn, hey, buddy, you and me, and I'm the big cheese, you've got to stay with me. So that's a hugely powerful thing to help them begin to develop a little bit of continuity about what's going on in their head, that there are priorities, and being with me and your survival is one of them, man. And that's very important. Now, on another thing, let's just say you want to just be able to get the dog to walk on a leash. When I have a little crazy little thing, I'll start them far earlier on a leash than I will one that is not, because there's no need for a dog that's very agreeable and walks with me and goes with me. And, you know, I'll get on the leash when I need to get on the leash. But when I have a little dog who just struggles, just the two of us together, just struggles, just understanding that we're there together, I'm going to help them. I'm going to take the little 13-week-old dog, and I'm going to put a collar and a leash on it. And we're just going to walk down, we're not out in the middle of the field. We're just going to walk down the road or the path connected on the leash. And if they just flip upside down and drag and have a holy cow or whatever they do about it, I have a collar that can't slip off over their head so that they can just get away. And now they've learned this big fun avoidance thing. But they have something that's going to stay on there, and we're just going to walk. You don't have to heel right next to me. You don't have to do all that stuff. But we're connected on the leash, and we're going to walk down here where I want to walk. And, of course, the first time or two or three or four, it may be quite the spectacle. And you have to keep your energy level down, your voice is down. Understand this could be just craziness. Kind of like my description with Naked of the first time I put her on a leash, and I had a rabid crocodile on there, and then within 15 minutes that was just gone. On a little guy, it won't be just gone in 15 minutes necessarily, but it's like you're just gonna walk with a leash. That's it, you know. And if you want to flip up down and you want to get drug on your back or whatever, that's fine. I'm cool. Nothing upsets me. We're just gonna walk, and pretty soon my energy state and my way of being transfers through that leash to this dog. And maybe it'll take 4 or 5 days, maybe it'll take one, but pretty soon they will absorb my state of, well, I guess we're going to take a walk. And I haven't punished them or corrected anything or taught them anything. I have merely worn down some of that particular mental craziness, and where they can find instead the joy of just taking this walk down the road. Just the walk down the road. Now, you can't do this on the sidewalk around the cul-de-sac. That does not go well. You've got to go somewhere, you know, where it's just you and the dog, and you guys can work this out without you worrying about people going, what are you doing to that poor little dog, as it's flipping around trying to get off the leash. But I hope that my calmness, I'm not going to give up. I really care about you, little dog. And we're going to go do this thing together. Pretty soon that transfers to them. And then pretty soon you start to see them going, well, okay, this seems cool. And it's not because I punished them or corrected them or did anything. I just replaced a lot of that craziness with something else. And there is pleasure in it. And there is cooperation, teamwork in it. And that's really important. And likewise, let's do another thing on young dogs. Let's do the retrieving thing. So if they're retrievers and if they like to retrieve, here's another place where we can begin to take the craziness, if you have one of those, out of this and just make it eventually become replaced with something that is not craziness. So if the little guy, when they're real little, it's real nice if you do maybe two retrieves, maybe three. Okay, if they're crazy wild about retrieving and you do a ton of it, then we grow crazy wild. I have told this to people for years. And what everyone has when you have a real high roller that really likes to retrieve, what does everyone do with that? They throw it 25 times. And then they wonder, they're like, well, look at this dog, man. He's just wild. He's fired up. And it's like, yeah. And you just really did everything you could to make that be the way it is. So when you have a real high roller that really likes to do this, then do two or three and have them be really good. And all of them, when they're real little, they come back to you, right? Because they don't know anything. They either don't retrieve at all, but when they do come back to you. So make sure that you get a kind of a good dynamic, and then you just stop before they start coming up with all the ways to make it more interesting, like running around, like doing flybys, like all the stuff that they do. And then use that retrieving, just a few of them. And if you, from the beginning, start where it's kind of habitual, just go out and come back with it, then that's what you have. And then you quit. So that's very short-lived opportunity is always a very simple one. It's absolutely clear what everyone's role in it is. And you don't do it a lot and a lot and a lot, but you just do it a little bit and no more. So that way in their wild little minds, that part isn't wild. And that's very important. So now let's just, I could just go on and on, but on dogs, when you begin to work, more serious stuff. If you've done the puppy stuff, which has began to formulate a little bit more consistency in their ability to think and understand and interact, then when you do start doing your more formal training, your heel and shit and here and front finish, and you begin to teach them to hold a bumper and you begin to force fetch them and do all the stuff that you're doing with them. If when you begin that, if you've already set up this relationship between the two of you and this communication thing where they trust you, then it's a whole lot easier. And when you have not, and that's what I get in all the time, there is no trust, there's no communication, there's just get away with whatever you can get away with. So then you have to go in there and set up some kind of trust and set up some kind of communication. And it's a little bit more difficult. So if you're doing all your own dog, oh, for heaven's sake, start it well with this kind of thing in mind. But whenever you do start it, and I've had one that I've gotten recently that was fairly mature, not a puppy anymore, and they referred to it as a puppy because of this kind of behavior. And this guy's thinking is very short in little spurts. This, that, this, that, this, that. And whatever you do, they can only do it for a little while, and then they do something else. So it's a dog that has started that way as a puppy and then has grown up that way. And so with those dogs, again, you cannot be frustrated. Pressure is not the answer. Being angry is not the answer. But you have to like be really good as a trainer, because you have to go, all right, we're going to do very, very, very simple things. We are going to heel and sit. And when they sit, they're going to have to sit for maybe 10 seconds, maybe 20. That's really hard. They know how to heel and sit. But to just sit and then that's it is really hard. So if you take something that's pretty easy to enforce and pretty easy to carry out, and you start with that on a very simple basis, you know, we're going to heal and then we're going to sit. And sitting may be for a moment, like a 60-second moment, or maybe more. And we may heal. And, you know, I say obedience always needs to be done in very short spurts so you have their attention span. Well, when they don't have an attention span and we're trying to build one, then you have to do it. Then you take a big walk and they just heal and they just sit the whole thing, half hour, 20 minutes, until pretty soon you just sort of wear. I mean, they're crazy thinking, the synapses firing all over the place. They kind of wear out because they're firing and nothing's happening other than they're just healing and then they sit. And then they heal, and then they sit, and all those synapses kind of just take a rest until this dog is now healing and sitting. And if you sit for a minute, they just sit. So you have to be very calm and very patient and take a long time to do the simplest of things with some repetition until this dog's fiery craziness finally, it just wears itself out with nowhere to go and nothing to do but these very simple movements that you're talking about. And one of the reasons that particular kind of thing is successful when you start with one of these dogs is because you're moving, because their little minds are moving all over the place. So being very static, you know, like holding a bumper and fetching a bumper, real static stuff, that's hard because their mind is so very not static. But if you take that wild mind and just do this walking and sitting, and walking and sitting, I don't care, around 10 blocks. Oh, just a lot. Just take it and come back. Then you have used movement, which is rewarding and fulfilling to these kind of minds, and yet the mind has had to kind of calm down. So that's a really powerful tool with these guys. Now, this is not, I'm going to go throw the bumper 50 times. That'll wear him out. Because now we have crazy mind and crazy body. So the crazy mind gets crazier. But if we have moving, calm body, then we start to develop the moving, calm mind. And there's no craziness in there. So it's all this kind of stuff that's really helpful and important on this. And you start at the beginning. You don't start at the end. So if you have a two-year-old that's wild and crazy and you've already kind of trained them, and they come in and they sit down and they set the bumper down and pick it up and then it's hanging from the, and then they spit and then they're panting and then, oh, they're panting, then they back up and that kind of dog, okay? One, the pressure ain't going to be the answer. I don't care who tells you that. You have to go back and get into their heads and change that crazy firing, synapse firing, into something else. And that doesn't happen in 2 or 3 days or 2 or 3 weeks. That takes a while. And the easiest thing to do is start when they're a puppy, okay? And then develop the kind of thinking you want before it starts. And it really helps a lot. So that's a little bit of a very, very large topic. I hope, because there's a lot of those out there, that it helps a few people. So now I'm going to get on to a couple of the listener questions. So here we go with one that I've had for a while. And I thought I kind of answered this one earlier, but maybe I haven't. So here we have, reading your book and working with their 11-week-old pup. Two quick things. I would have started to freak out already about her not bringing it back, the bumper, I assume, bringing back her bumper if I hadn't read the section about retrieving. Sent a video. She'll definitely go to the bumper and most of the time pick it up, but not bring it back. Per your book, I'll keep trying with very low pressure and hopefully she'll get it in a few weeks. Okay, I'm not sure what I said in the book about that, but when you have a little puppy, okay, they need to really like to retrieve. So, and retrieving, you got to get them to like it to start with. So you have your puppy bumper, your sock, you rub it all over them. You have no rules. Rub it all over them, get them excited, let them kind of grab at it if they're not that interested. Throw it a couple feet out there, right? Oh, and then if they don't pick it up, you run out there, grab it again, wrestle around, rub it on them, play with them, throw it, all that kind of stuff. You know, and if nothing happens, then stop. And then the next day, you know, try that again. It's just, all I can say is it always works. But there are no rules. All right, you just sit here and I will throw it and then I will send you. And you can't do any of that stuff until the dog is just really excited about going out there and getting it. So go back to crazy. Don't stand there. If they just, if I was there and the puppy ran out there and stood over it, I would run out there just happy as could be. And I'd grab that thing and I'd whip it around and pop it and rub it and walk and play with it and toss it up in the air until I got that dog to go get it in their mouth and just even come somewhere near me. And if I needed, I could have a real light cord. So once they got us, come over here, and I'd bring them over just like I was the coolest, most fun thing. A lot of energy, because that's what the dog needs at this point. This is not like one of the dogs that I mentioned just a few moments ago in my deal. This is one that's standing out there going, yeah, so we need some excitement and we need some energy. So I'm going to provide all of it. And it's just going to be so contagious that that little dog's going to go get it and come back. You don't start by, let me try and throw something different that maybe they like more. I wouldn't do any of that stuff. Your energy level's low. Dog's energy level is low. You're disappointed. Dog knows it. Nothing good is going to come of this. So we need to get just a little bit more crazy. So the dog's going, I don't know about this, but it must be fun. He sure's having a lot of fun. And then get that going before you ever back off on any rules or any stuff like that. That's a necessity. It's not really, puppies do all kind of funny things. So just go out and have a lot more fun. No, this is not the end of the world. All right. Now, my next question. All right. We have, let me see. There, somebody has their lab, 11-month-old black lab, outstanding breeding, been hunting, went goose hunting, is the first non-training bird he'd ever picked up. He's hunted about 2 days a week since then, geese, ducks, grouse, woodcock, and pheasants. He's a machine. Wow, that is a lucky dog. Okay, now my question. He is a very soft dog and does great with positive reinforcement. I did force fetch him. He did well, but it took a while. He buckled early on. Not sure what buckling is, but okay. In other words, he wasn't responding real well and didn't like the kind of stuff you're doing. But I kept at it small amounts at a time. Lots of fun bumpers before and after. I've started collar conditioning twice. I'm really scared to continue. He caves on a two. That's a two. He's a two. It would be a very low setting on the collar. I don't know what to do. My hunting friends and breeders say, collar condition him. You are the final authority help. All right. Part of my fear is we rescued a field trial wash-up lab who's still scared to death of an electric collar 6 years later. Wow. Excellent hunter, wonderful dog. And I don't want to turn Hank off to the collar. He loves it because it means hunting or training. I'm not going to compete with him, but I will do blinds and handling. Should I push through the caving like I did in force fetching or just do the positive stuff? Please help. Okay. For one, why are you collar conditioning him? Now, I know why I would do it with a dog, because I need, you know, absolute, so they understand rules apply, close, far, near, whatever. So if you're just doing it because everyone says you have to do it, if he does everything phenomenal, he's a machine and you couldn't be happier. You know, I'm not sure what the collar conditioning is for. Now, to go on to advanced stuff, the programs, you know, require a little bit of that. So I've never had a dog that I could not collar condition. Prior to doing collar conditioning with these dogs, and for anyone listening to this, what does that mean? So we're talking about an electric collar, which, you know, I know a lot of people are like, oh, it's a terrible thing. You know, it's no more terrible than a healing stick or a leash and a choke chain or whatever. It just kind of depends on who's wielding it. But collar conditioning is where you have electric collar, which has two prongs, which are generally somewhere on their neck, which is an enforcement of discomfort up to really bad pain, but it's not a good feeling. And so collar conditioning is where they learn that when they comply with the couple of force commands that you have, that is commands that have been backed up with enforcement training pressure. When you have commands that you enforce with this, that they can completely stop it and control it by responding quickly to whatever command you gave. So you teach them, you condition them to a new form of training pressure that replaces other forms of training pressure they're already familiar with. Now I'm going to suspect that herein lies your problem. So it is an enforcement. So a nick on the collar is going to be an enforcement of sit or hear, can be heel a little bit, certainly sit or hear. So when you are doing obedience and teaching a dog to heel and sit, no matter what dog you have, they must understand training pressure. So they must understand that when you say heel, they must make a good effort to stay at your side as you're moving away. Or if you change direction, they must make their best effort to turn and stay with you. It isn't for you to do all the work. You say heel, then you jerk on the chain, then they walk with you. You change direction, you jerk on the chain, then they walk. You're doing all the work. This is where we use training pressure to transfer responsibility over to the animal. So when I tell my dog, and I like to start with a little plastic wiffle bat, right? Shouldered on my left shoulder for a dog on my left side. And after I've taught them what sit means, and I've used a jerk up on the chain to have them set. And they, you know, they sit, they get, okay, now, all right, I'm set. Right? They got to get kind of a slow, well, all right, it's good enough. I'll come in and I will begin to enforce my sit, my command sit, with a pop on the bottom with that plastic bat. So they do know they're supposed to sit, and they just not in a big hurry, right? So I'm going to teach them, you need to have a sense of seriousness and urgency about doing these things that I'm asking you to do. The reason why is when my dog is going to be chasing a pheasant through a barbed wire fence or off a cliff, and I say no here, they have to no here right now. Not because they're afraid, but or any of that, but because they've been conditioned, right? When I call you, you have to come no matter what. I don't care what, chasing a pheasant, anything. If I call you, it's serious and you have to come. And it's not because I have a long cord or an electric collar. It's because I've taught you. When I say something, it's important. It's important. So I do that with set. So I'll be walking along and I have my bat shouldered on my shoulder. And I'll say sit. And the minute they hear it, they feel that pop on the bottom. And they have to sit that bottom down. And similarly, if I call them to me, I say here, and I do a jerk on the choke chain. Even if they're getting up and making their way to me, that's not good enough. I need them to have a very short synapse path in that head that when they hear the word here, then I need to get over there. Not abject fear. But I need to get over there. So a jerk on the choke chain, they can avoid that jerk on the choke chain, and they can avoid that. They can control that pop on the bottom with the wiffle bat if they just execute. All right, I'll sit. All right, I'll come here. But they need to understand the pressure, understand why it's there, and understand how they control it. They have to be comfortable with it. Now, the level of pressure that all these dogs get is different because some dogs, just the idea of a wiffle bat popping them on the bottom is humongous. Okay, and so I'm not wailing on anybody who doesn't take very much, but I am giving them enough that they can understand it and deal with it. And so even if they're really good, and when every time you tell them that they're a good dog, and that's what you're kind of going to instead of enforcing sometimes, then you always have to be nice. And if you're not nice, then they may not, you know, give you as much. And I might be wrong, but I suspect you might have a little bit of that. Positive reinforcement is great. I just finished a dog through the yard handling that was, boy, if you just got after him, he wouldn't do it. But if you kind of got after him and then went, good dog, ha, he gave you everything he had. I mean, he had the training pressure, and then there was that, you did it, buddy, good dog. Oh, he just beamed. And so he was a real softy, didn't take very much pressure, but he had to have the pressure to learn to go and to stop and to do all this stuff and to learn to fetch and all of that. So he, and a softy that took positive reinforcement, but had to have his level of training pressure and understood, okay, I got it, I'm doing it, I got it. Instead of, oh, you aren't very nice, I don't like this. So even the real softies have got to learn to deal with a level of training pressure and enforcement. And you do it by not making them good dog all the time, but by teaching them, all right, sit, boom, come on, bud. Try hard for me. That's it. Good dog. So that they get their yeah, you're a good dog, but they also understand, hey, you got to give me some effort. You've got to give me some effort. So before you start the collar conditioning or finish it off or whatever you're doing, I would certainly go back and make sure that I could use just the simple physical forms of pressure and that this dog understood them and knew how to respond and control them. So then when you come in with the collar, and I've had this 100 out of 100 times, it's not a big deal. because I did a real good job. All my dogs are collar conditioned, every one of them, and I'm never rushing over to that. I always want to make sure that they understand training pressure and what the deal is. Give me good effort, bud. Just give me good effort. And if you're a softie, I get that. You still have to give me good effort. And I'm not going to reward you every time you don't fall apart on me. I'm going to reward you when you give me a good effort. That's when I'm going to good dog you. And when you're not giving me good effort, I'm not going to good dog you. So you might want to go back and revisit a little bit on, the training pressure that you've put on that dog before that. That's the best I can tell you. But anyway, that's what I would do on that. So I'm at 45 minutes now, and if I haven't put everybody to sleep, it's time to wrap this one up. And let's see, next week's Thanksgiving, guys. And everybody's hunting their hearts out right now. So again, I wish everybody safety. Safe, safe, safe. Make sure everybody plays well with the gun. Nobody shoots anybody's dog. And that everybody's a good sportsman in this. And I look forward to coming back soon.